apologize for some inconvenience today. Because by the clinic and get something. It caught me just last week after our budget vote. And I think it's becoming more worse. I think I've got to go to the doctor. I've done everything that I could. It's not catching up in the decision already. Without waste of time, I think. We have our program here, and we have not had a chance to be briefed, especially by SASTA. So many members would be very happy to listen what SASTA is doing in particular. But generally, also, we have to give a lot of things to tell us. We need to keep it to the label. As a matter of principle, there may be new faces there, and so we have to introduce one another. I'm also very happy to welcome our, this is a very sickly committee. Most of our members last week were very ill, all of them almost. We were left with two, only one person. I think they have now infected me now. who knows, maybe I'll also be away from next week if things are continuing in this fashion. Anyway, welcome our members who also have been sick. Welcome back home. Always home whenever you are in periods of stress. You must know you have a home here. You'll heal when you come back here. Okay. Right, I'll start here by introducing my desk here. It's myself, Chairman of the Chairperson, and then Shanaz Isaac, the Committee Secretary, and Renee Osborne Mullins, our researcher. And I will therefore allow our members to introduce themselves to you and yourselves, the members. Thank you very much. And everybody else, by the way, after the two delegations introduce themselves. Any other person outside this institution must introduce herself or himself. Thank you very much. We want to know everybody who is here. Right.
Okay. Chair, morning. The chair and our guest and everybody. I'm in the last danger. We process and technology in the past. I don't want to say what we understand now about us. Otherwise, I'm happy to be back. Good morning, everybody. My name is Janita Proctor-Lazis. I'm a member of the committee, the agenda. Thank you. Morning. I am a member of the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology. Thank you.
My name is Peter Smith.
Chair, honourable members, guests, good morning. I am Nkosi Mwelo Nungonya, the deployee of the African National Congress from OR Tambo region in the Eastern Cape, and a member of this committee.
There is another member just arriving. Can you may as well introduce yourself, honourable member? You are the last
no.
one.
Morning, everybody. I'm Sana Flaiki.
Okay, acting CEO, can you introduce your delegation?
Thank you, Chair and honourable members. My name is Gamson Collette. I'm the acting CEO of the NRF, normally the deputy CEO for research, innovation, support and advice.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Beverly Demont, the Group Executive for Science Advancement in the NRF.
Good morning. My name is Thiago Nogueira from SASTA.
And what do you do in the SASTA world?
The Managing Director of SASTA.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Petio Matutu, the chief director for Human Capital and Science Platform from the Department of Science and Technology.
Good morning, honorable chair and honorable members. I'm Happy Mulife from DST, director currently.
Okay, there's another man from the DST at the corner there. He's decided to hide this side so he will not be seen as part of the he is accountable to DST.
Morning, honorable members. Thank you all. I'm Luyanda Franz, Parliament of Liaison Officer in the Ministry of DST.
I see some blue faces at the back there.
Good morning, I'm Shana Khan from Media.
Morning, honorable members. What you say so that you can't hide after yourself.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Libert. I'm a monitor from Parliament Monitoring Group.
Morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Mava. I'm from Parliamentary Communication Services.
Okay. Because that type of media, so you must be careful what you say. Right. I'll allow, therefore, your delegation to make their presentation.
Thank you, Chair. This morning we have a presentation on science advancement. As you can appreciate, we have the media here. It's a very important component of the business of UNR and the DST. And this morning, the group executive for science advancement, Dr. Gabby DeMont, will do the presentation after which we'll take questions. Can you give us the time for the presentation?
Notes which I think are supposed to be appearing on your presentation. Then, you have from 10 to 11, and from 11 to 11:30 questions and discussions. Yeah.
Okay. We are starting for the past 10, so.
Yeah, so we will give you another extra.
I just wanted to get a little chat for you. We don't stop doing it. But thanks for confirming that. Okay. Over to Dr. DeMont.
Good morning, honorable members, and thank you very much for having us. And it's also good to hear that you're all healthy and able to listen to us. I think it's a very important part of our business. I'm really happy you're able to be here and to be with us. Are you okay if I sit, or is it fine? Okay.
Actually, we are the largest delegation since the start of the Strat Plan. Mm. So we have almost all members are here today. Mm. Right.
Okay, so I'm going to take that as good news until I hear the questions. If you've had a look, we've seen through the presentation, but my presentation is going to first take us a little bit back to the history, then look at the science advancement portfolio within the NRF, both from a policy and structural perspective, and then go into the activities of SAFTA. Not all of them. We really couldn't put all out there, but just to give you a flavor of the kinds of things that we're doing. And then lastly, to look and suggest maybe what are the kinds of things that need attention into the future. So that's what we're going to do. Those of you who have been, like the chairperson himself, would be very familiar with the historical context. But for the newer members, I just put in a slide that explains how we came to be and how we came into being within the NRF. And this organization has a history that goes far back in its precursor state to the Foundation for Education, Science and Technology, which some might hear as FIST. Often, the members in the past spoke about FIST. And this was an agency of the Department of Arts, Culture, Science and Technology at the time, DACS. And its accountability through DACS was mainly through a FIST council. So it was an independent organization reporting into DACS and governance through the FIST council. In line at the time with what government was doing to reduce the number of entities, look at realignment, look at how organizations fit together, FIST was dedicated as a cultural institution and incorporated into the NRF in December 2002, with Reliant reporting then into the Department of Science and Technology when the Arts and Culture and Science and Technology became separate entities. The name changed to FASTA, as we are presently known, and the first director for that entity known as FASTA, which was myself, was appointed in July 2003. And from that time, we began the corporatization and strategic looking at how this might fit into the system as part of the NRF. So that's basically the historical context of how we came.
Is there a problem there? I will sort it out.
So, as part of the NRF, from a legislative point of view, we would then be governed by the NRF Act, because we are a business division of the NRF Act, and you would know we were here last month, as it is reporting on the annual performance plan for the NRF, and all the work of the NRF is governed by the NRF Act. If you look at the Act, and we put it in here once again just to highlight, if we look at the Act, it promotes and supports research. And we've highlighted the main parts through funding human resource development and the research facilities in order to facilitate the creation of knowledge in those areas and therefore contribute to the improvement of the quality of life. Looking at it, if you're sitting there, it might be very easy to ask to what extent we find this Act enabling, because nowhere in there do you see science advancement, public engagement, all the different terms that are used in this particular sector, outreach, science and technology awareness. But in terms of being part of the NRF Act of 1998 and being part of the NRF Act, in which was seen at the time to be an enabling act, we saw ourselves functioning very much in support of human resource development, and that is where the main focus has been in terms of the NRF strategic goals, and the goals we've been through as well, and you becoming quite familiar with them in terms of promoting the research, growing a representative council, providing the research platforms, grant making, and then all of that contributing to a vibrant national system. So we've seen our role, because we're not playing in all those spaces, but really supporting how to build a representative science and technology workforce in South Africa. And you must remember, building this workforce is not just about student numbers. To get the student numbers, you need public support. You need families that support science. So it's a much broader context. So we've really interpreted the NRF strategic goals in its broadest sense in terms of our placement within the NRF. Vision 2015. Came into place in, we started working on this in 2007, and our plans as NRF that we've presented showed that the NRF vision and its composition rests on those three main pillars, as we call them, the research, innovation, support, and advancement, the national research facilities, and then public science and technology education and outreach, or science advancement as it becomes known. And these are the three main business divisions of the NRF, and providing then in terms of world-class research, a transformed society, and sustainable environment in which to make this happen. And so you can see from Vision 2015, as early as 2007, NRF then took a bold step to say that the public engagement mandate of the NRF is a formal business division and part of its strategic framework. That was in 2007 that 2015 came about, Vision 2015. We now have an organizational structure to support that Vision 2015 in the way it was promulgated at the time. And you see our three major business divisions in terms of research and innovation support and advancement, science advancement, and then the national facilities. And this we spoke about at the annual performance presentation. So if we look within the NRF context, I've tried to look at what are the strategic developments for public engagement on science, because we do know that the bulk of the work that the NRF does is in the research and innovation support space, in terms of research support to higher education, to researchers, to institutions. We spoke the last time about bursaries and research chairs and centers of excellence. But underpinning that has been a movement in order to strengthen the support role within that particular framework. And so you can see there the types of interventions that have taken place. The public engagement formally placed as one of the three business divisions of the NRF. At the time, there were suggested changes to the NRF Act in terms of the times that we have been speaking about in terms of visibility for public engagement in the Act, but you do know the ministerial review of the science landscape will be presented, and that will still take into account the total landscape, and so that type of changes, if it comes about, will be pending. There was an independent institutional review of the NRF, with SASTA as one of the entities that was reviewed by independent reviewers in 2010. There's been a development of the overall NRF investment framework that we spoke about, and public engagement is part of that. We're looking for an increased investment in this portfolio. The new corporate position for science advancement and public engagement was created, and a first appointment in November 2011. And then exciting is the development of a national STEMI science, technology, engineering, maths, and innovation strategy, a public awareness strategy that we are talking about and going to be looking at the development of in partnership with the DST. So those, for me, have been the strategic developments that have taken place in the sector up until this time. We are governed very much by our policy framework, which goes way back to the white paper put out in 1996, and the basis of that paper says you need a society which understands science and technology and its critical role. So this placing together of science and society has its basis right in the very early policy directives that we received, and this information has to be disseminated as widely as possible, but more importantly, in ways that are understood and appreciated by the public audiences that we have. So we might have wide distribution, but not always in ways that are easily understood, and that is where the white paper positioned this sector quite early on. It was followed more specifically by the research and development strategy of 2002, which became more specific. And we are still very clear about these things, because they are all still relevant, needing to make science attractive, relevant, accessible, increasing the number of activities, increasing participation by women and previously disadvantaged, using big science focus areas. And you see that, you know, the whole of the astronomy and all the big science around that, the paleo sciences, we use using those to spark excitement in the youth. And then to definitely communicate the future of the science careers, because to build up into this pipeline in the higher education sector, we need a constant future of science careers to be made very visible, and the value of those to be explained and constantly communicated. So in the R&D strategy, these are what come out very clearly. In addition to those which frame our work, we are guided also by the 10-year innovation plan of the Department of Science and Technology, the Human Resource Development Strategy, the Youth into Science Strategy, which is a DST-specific strategy which looks to increasing access and motivation around science, especially for the youth. And then the National Strategy for Math, Science, and Technology Education, which is a Department of Basic Education strategy. And then DST has adopted 18 schools, and so we have some connection to the Dinner Lady Schools Initiative. So these would broadly be policy imperatives that would impact upon our work. Out of the Act that we saw in the beginning and the NRF mandate, we created and put forward our mandate to say we advance public awareness, appreciation, and engagement of science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and innovation in South Africa. Very broad mandate and how you bring it down and what are the connections. But that is the basic role that we play at the national level now, is to advance that public awareness, appreciation, and engagement. In our early days, we put together a strategic approach of how we could, because it's very, very broad, and how do we focus? We cannot do everything. Where do we fit in? What do we do? And so this is the framework that we've been using up until now to guide the kind of functions that we can deliver on that mandate. And our work and our structure within the organization as software focuses on these three areas mostly. The first one, if I start with, is science education. By science education, we're looking very specifically at three areas: school science support. Remember, we are not within the Department of Education, so the word that we are doing here is support. How do we support the system? Science resources, in what way do we provide resources? And then a very strong focus on careers in science, engineering, and technology in the broader sense. Science communication, we're looking at building science communication capacity, and I'll talk about that a little later. Broad public engagement programs around science promotion, and then a focus on science and the media, and we have a number of interventions broadly with science and the media. And then the science engagement, or what we call the science awareness platform, is using infrastructure to actually provide platform for engagement around science. So all the national facilities, the science centers, the museums, the zoos, the national festivals, all of these that are in the system, how do we use them as platform for public engagement? So generally, this is the area where our work has tried to focus. I will then move on to looking, so that kind of gives you a sense of where we sit in the NRF, how we, what mandate we've been guided by, and how we've organized our work as the SASCA, the custodian of science advancement, but also in collaboration with all the national facilities and our partner organizations in the sector. Our funding framework, this has been the situation, and we've captured data earlier days, but we've just shown you for these for the last 6 years, and we've looked at our funding framework. The positive news about this, if you have a look at it, is that there's an increased support in the system for the work that is being done. It speaks to the need in the community for the type of work that needs to be done, and so you see very clearly an increase in the funding for this business division. However, if you look at it more closely, you would see that the bulk of our funding is contract funding, and most of this contract funding we get in support that we appreciate very much from the Department of Science and Technology. The purple line at the bottom you will see will be our MCF allocation, which hasn't changed very much, and then the other light purple color would be our funds that we can raise from interest or corporates or in, you know, rent or any way that we can actually raise external funding. So this is our funding situation, and we can come back to that. Corporate funding is important in the sector as well. We try to access CSI, and I've just listed three major ones that have come on board with us. Harmony Gold Mines have been very supportive. The chemical industry, CETA, and recently EDCON Group, more specifically the CNA. But all of them have been affected by the economic situation in the country right now, and because of that, this will be Harmony's last year of support for us. EDCON was with us for 2011 and 2012, but have come back to us to say, sorry, 2012, they don't see it happening, simply because they... It's not about the work, it's about their own, you know, the global situation, the economic in the country, and as soon as their situation changes, they would love to come back. So, the, you know, it does show you that they are interested, that they will work with us, but we are being affected by the current economic climate. Internally, I've tried to show you how the funds would be distributed across those three strategic areas that we spoke about in the beginning, and you can see that the bulk of the funding expenditure, that is contract and core, is in this sense being spent on education. Less of it then on client communication, and the others, as we spoke on the platforms that we are using for client engagement. And then the other would be what is used to actually run the business and other smaller interventions. But this is showing you the distribution, the balance of the distribution between those particular areas. Remember, we're talking about SASTA, but we are part of NRF, which then says that science advancement is carried out in the national research facilities as well. For example, Itemba Labs here, South African Astronomical Observatory, out in Cape Town in Sutherland, all the nodes of the South African Institute of Aquatic Biodiversity, the National Geological Gardens, etc. And you will see there that these national research facilities are able to access funding from SASA and the DST grants, which allows them to become increased platforms for science advancement and the kind of work that they do in the areas that they carry out the science advancement. So they have access to this funding as well. And you will see their outreach costs as well. You will see the green line, just because it's standing out, I'll just pick up on it, is obviously talking to the astronomy sector, South African Astronomical Agency, and you know there's been a lot of activity around that. You would have seen, especially 2009, International Year of Astronomy, and post that. So there's, in addition, you know, with SALT, there is a collective benefits plan. So SAA, through SALT, actually makes a larger percentage of its budget available because that's part of the collateral benefits plan, and you can see that in terms of how it plays out in their outreach costs. So if I go then move from the finances, I look at interpreting our mandate and just look very quickly at the audiences. Our primary target audiences, in the way the business is playing out itself right now, there's a great focus on educators and learners, tertiary students, and then through big public engagement programs on the general public. That's where, but they don't function in isolation because consumed within there are very strategic audiences which we will target depending on the kind of engagement that's needed. So there's a very strong collaboration with the higher education community, the research council, and the National Research Facilities, because that is where the science base lies. And this kind of work that we do depends to a large extent on having scientists available to us to work with us because it is the science that is needed to be communicated. Industry is a sector that we are forging relationships with. The general outreach and awareness sector, the science centers in our community, the national science festivals, and then obviously a strategic partnership with the media is necessary, as Ganson started off by saying. This is an important part of how the message of science is reaching much wider audiences. So now what I'm going to do, I'm going to go one down. It's almost like we're burrowing deeper and deeper in and look at the, if you remember that circle that we had divided into three, I'm going to look very specifically at the school-based interventions and give you a flavor of what they might be. And it's very hard to, you know, decide just because it's just so wide-ranging. But this would be a framework that we would be using to explain, because I remember the question was, how do you connect, you know, what do you do? What is the NRF link, you know, because they seem to be so focused on higher education. What is the link to other parts of the education system? So, and I'm now talking, remember, about school-based intervention, okay? So, or using the school area as a focus. So there are, firstly, learner support for learners where we're focusing on performance. And in here, it's very much related to the curriculum. Right, so performance, trying to connect to the curriculum. And the next column shows you some of the ways in which we try to do that. Currently, learner camps for science, especially physics and life sciences, mathematics during the school holidays. educator workshops on content and methodology, provision of curriculum resource materials to learners, educators, and schools. So in that broad, those are the broad means in which we try to support that objective. Secondly is participation. Now, participation doesn't always change performance. Participation, for example, means if we visit science festivals, let's talk about a big science festival, SciFest in Grahamstown each year, you get at least 70,000 people going through the science festival, but we cannot link the science festival for one visit directly to performance. But we do know that somebody might meet a scientist there, might be exposed, might go to a science show, but might be inspired by the night stars, they have a telescope, all kinds of interventions. So they are used as bases to inspire, to motivate, and therefore possibly increase participation of the broad sector in science. And that's those are very broad, the numbers are very large. So for example, if we say that at the National Zoological Gardens, about more than 250,000 learners pass through the zoo in any one year, that is around participation. But if they then have specific workshops after that general visit, and those would then try to change and influence performance. So just so that you see the difference between those two. In line with what the Department of Science and Technology Youth into Science strategy wants us to look at as well and support is identifying and nurturing talent. How do we find the talent out there? And it's not enough just to find it, but how do you nurture it? And so participation in Olympiads, competitive instances, Olympiads and various competitions throughout the school system helps us to identify talent and then to put in support structures for talent that we've identified through that. And then I said promotion on set careers, interaction with role models. And this is where our scientists, our skilled professionals are very important to us because we are rolling out a major initiative to get them into the communities, to talk to children, tell them what it's like to be in the kinds of workforces that they'll be, what do they need to do, what kind of resources, what kind of subjects, what kind of personality would need to do. I think we sometimes just think, well, we need to take a career, or we need to encourage learners to take a career, but we don't think that careers also are linked to personalities and interests, and you know, there are a number of complex factors to take into account. So having them talk to a scientist or an engineer or somebody from the technology sector is very important for them. This gives you a sense, very broadly, just for 2012, we might be running projects this year or large programs, and how might we be reaching them. And these would be different kinds of programs. They would fit into any of those four objectives that we've done: supporting performance, increasing participation, identifying talent, or giving set career awareness. So you see the footprint is fairly extensive, considering the size of the workforce that we actually have, and we can only really do this in conjunction with our partners out there, higher education institutions, science councils, science centers, and other outreach partners that we have. The DST Dinaledi schools, last year you would have had also a presentation where the DST explained the thinking about the adoption of the 18 per province out of the total batch of Dinaledi schools to try to assist in all the ways that we've highlighted up until now. And we inherited this project last year and have started some work, but still it's very much in its infancy with us in trying to get things done here. So you can look at that basket of activities, and so we try to get these learners into the National Science Olympiads, free participation. Up until now, there's been education resources, interactive whiteboards, laptops, curriculum-aligned material, learner and educator guides, and science equipment in those particular schools. Extra tuition has been there for some time, but it still needs to be rolled out in a more coordinated manner into this year, and that's what we are still busy on and trying to formalize that. have formed science clubs last year, and that is ongoing. They take part in National Science Week and all the others. An interesting one is they became part of where the talent was identified to attend international science events sponsored by the DST in terms of a physics camp in Canada. The footprint, I think, just for the members' information, because remember you asking me, you know, where are these municipalities in which some of these projects have been taking place, and this tries to show, and this would be sometimes just in a particular year or over two business years, and it could change. Now we rotate, you know, where funding is scarce on a project, for example, as I explained to you now about the corporate funding, we would need to rearrange and refocus, and so this is the latest footprint that we have in terms of areas that we have run projects in terms of giving you a flavor of the municipalities that have been in the framework. Using the education footprint, I thought I would just give you two examples and show you. The first one, we spoke earlier about identifying talent in science, engineering, and technology, and we said we use the competitions, all different kinds of competitions. We have a competition in astronomy and all the different competitions, and we at SOSTA run the National Science Olympiad. And we always ask the question, I guess in our field, so what? You know, somebody entered the competition, you know, where did they land up, what did they do, did it make a difference, what has been the impact? And so we're trying to follow this through, and it's quite a mammoth task in its early days, but one of the things you can see is that the participation in the National Science Olympiad has been increasing, and that is good to note. It has been increasing because of increased subsidization in some of the provinces subsidizing their learners, increased participation through DSC programs like the Dinner Lady School Project, etc. So these are moving the base of the number of participants into these types of competitions. It's not always that the participation equals performance. We can get them to participate, but the performance is something else. But what we did is that is a grade 10 to 12, which has been running now for how many years? More than, it's in its 46th year. That's way even before we came into the NRF. So it's been around in the system for a while. And then with the private funding we received last year through the EdCon group, EdCon specifically wanted us to look at the primary school level, and we started a similar identification of talent in the primary school level. And the first year in 2011, we were very surprised by the really good participation that we received from the primary school in terms of entry. When we looked at the, we took the 2009 learners, top learners in the 2009 Olympiad who were in grade 12 at the time, and we tried to track them. Now, tracking is very difficult if you don't have an organized system, because once they leave the school system, where do you find them, you know? And so we really tried to set up a system that would help us. That means we use the data that we got from the National Science Olympiad. And we were able to, in 2009, they wrote the competition, and in 2010, we were able to attract 160 of the top learners that had written that. We're just interested in this, in that top echelon that had done math and physics, to see where had they gone. So in 2010, we found 160 of them, and 141 of them, I think, were were at higher education institutions. So they were in first year. 2011, we assumed and hoped they were still in second year. And then in 2012, earlier this year, we tried to trace those 160 again to see where they were. We were able to find at least 70% of them still within higher education institutions, and their disciplines were as listed here. You can see a highest number in engineering, others doing BSc degrees, medicine, BCom, IT, actuarial science, and then other degrees. And these were tracking them from the just from a small sample in the National Science Olympiad. So it is that they're going into science degrees, at least the top performers. You saw the number there was 245,000. We are not in any way able to track all of those. So we started with a small study, and it does show that they are moving into the science system, but in various fields within that system. But the objective, obviously, is to escalate and then follow up. At this stage, there were 63% of those were males and 37% those females. And for the National Science Olympiad, you find that it's still representative probably of the matric results. So in that, still about those percentages as well were based on race in terms of black and white in university. So this is what we've got. You can't say right now because they are still in third year, whether they stay in, where they go. So we're going to have to track for a number of years as well. These are, we're running the first school debate, science debate. You know, some schools have a very strong debating culture, but the debate is usually on UN-type topics that are debated at the UN. But in this case, what we introduced 3 years ago was debates around science, and very particularly around the major public engagement science platforms that we use. So in nanotechnology, biotechnology, and hydrogen fuel cells, and broader issues around those platforms. And we found that the especially within the high schools, the take-up and the interest around science has been amazing, that they connect with the universities in their provinces, because it's run in all the provinces. They have provincial competitions. And this year, the national competition is going to take place during Science Week, where these young learners debate on issues of science. And it's very encouraging to see how their educators and themselves have linked up with the science system and really do research, and the researchers themselves are part of our panels. And this is something that we're really proud to have still see it developing. The Science Center Network is a very important part of the work that we do, because without them, they are the network out there that can help us to achieve many of these goals. This is in line with the Science Center, the rollout of the network of science centers, and it is rolling out more and more into the provinces. And where it is not, what we do find is an increasing number of mobile labs. Now, the science centers themselves will be fixed in particular areas, but either attached to a science center or to a university, we have an increasing number of mobile labs supported through programmatic support in the Department of Science and Technology. And these are able to travel out into rural areas and reach larger and larger numbers of audiences around science. Some of them are supported also by private companies, ACIL or Mattel, but in conjunction with public funding. But this is a very important network in terms of what we want to do. Careers, we said, one of the projects that we've used. This is not the only one. We have careers in space science, careers in other areas, but I just took one where we worked on a project called Careers in Engineering to show you how it's done. And this would have been the type of information that went out, what they do, the branches of engineering. Because we find that at the school level, learners say, I want to be an engineer. And when you ask, what type of engineer? They say, no, an engineer. Now, they don't understand that in engineering, you have mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, chemical engineering. There's just a whole discipline base under there. So there is a real need. So we worked with the ICSA, the Engineering Council of South Africa, and the Black Engineers Society in terms of the work that we wanted to do, and in conjunction with them and roll out role models, get them to talk. This is the type of information we are slowly gathering, tracking from 2007, when we started in five provinces, in 73 schools, just general set career information, and then worked more specifically with those who are enrolled in maths and science and physics and the life sciences, and giving them the kind of support. In the program, we found that by of the number that we started with, so the first number is very large because it's very general, and then you start working with those that are taking science and maths. So the number of learners who passed from the sample of 2,555, you can see those passed the senior certificate. And then we tracked from that number 572 of the 1,060 we could track into first-year studies in SET. And of those first-year studies in SET, 252 were actually in engineering. And these are all, in this case, African black students in schools in five provinces in terms of where we were working. And in first year, when we tracked them, this was the distribution of engineering students. This is where the kind, the sub-disciplines types of engineering fields that they were taking. So at this end, this stage, we're able to track 40% of the learners. We see that 54% of them are in the sex fields, those in engineering, but we do know we can't claim this. This is part of what they do. They're still in the school system. And it requires, will they contribute to set skills? We have to look at the graduation rates in 2014-15 to see that they come out. And this is the kind of tracking that we are looking at. Interesting study we did with undergraduate students, getting their attitudes, and we asked them, what was your parental, you know, what kind of influence did your parents have on your degree of choice? We worked with seven universities and looking at undergraduate students. And this is the response. You can see very few of them follow the careers that their parents wanted them to follow. They very much say they made their own decisions about it. So it means that we have to influence their decisions if they're making them themselves to help them and provide the information. And then while they're undergraduates, we ask them, you know, are you thinking of taking your studies to a postgraduate level? And look at the percentage that they say, yes, we are going to go to postgraduate level. But if you remember the kind of figures Ganson was presenting, it, you know, it's not as high as that in postgrad. So it means that there's continued communication that we need to do because they want to do that, they'd like to do that, but somewhere along the line they might be falling by the wayside. So there's still communication, career awareness that must happen still at the undergraduate level as well. So moving away from school-based activities, going to the broader public engagement programs. Most of these that we're running currently are DST-sponsored programs. As you can see, many of them using these programs to create awareness and provide facts and understanding and debate around the major areas that are supported through science and technology. One of these is the National Science Week. You can see the participation is increasing over the 2007 and 2011 period. It's just undergone last year a 10-year review, and the review has made some recommendations. So within the DST is a consideration of all the information from the review, and this is a project that really has reached a large number over the last 5 years of audiences. But one of the audiences we do want to increase through the National Science Week, we are getting a lot of learner participation, some educator participation, but it is a concentration that we'd like to now get more public involved in these broad engagement campaigns that we are running. When you travel overseas, and I'm sure many do, business to science and technology institutions. If you visit the museums and the science and technology museums especially, you do find that you have large audiences there, large family audiences, you know, parents and grandparents, and it's a culture we want to really inculcate and step up in our own society, that it's not just a learner intervention, it's not just an educator intervention, but it's a broader public intervention. And these kinds of large national campaigns should help us to do that as well. I've just taken one of the technology programs to show you how it works, and there are many. But in this case, we've used the Nanotechnology Public Engagement Program, or NPEP, as it is known, funded by the DSD and implemented by SAFTA. And it gives you the objectives there. You'll see it's to provide credible facts. There's a lot of sometimes miscommunication, a lot of fear, a lot of apprehension about some of the technologies, their rollouts, their possible impact on the community. And so credible fact-based information is a necessity provided by the science community. And then awareness, dialogue, and to enable decision-making in terms of how it impacts on the quality of life. How would they do that? Through a number of interventions besides the learner and educator, which I'm not going back to, although they would use that as well. In this case, it has a very strong industrial focus in terms of industry partners, and this was the Lab Africa Expo, the largest expo on looking at laboratory technology innovations around especially nanotechnology. And the NPEP program was there with the DST in Johannesburg last year, giving public lectures and specific lectures around nanotechnology, not only just public lectures, but lectures to the industrial community around this initiative. So it works in this sense, creating the interface with industry. I said one of the sub-focus areas in science communication is media, and we've had a number of really interesting interventions with media, one of them called Media Roundtables. In this case, we gather scientists in the field. In this case, the topic was nano and health, and so we would gather the appropriate qualified science people in this field and get them together with a number of journalists, invited journalists, for a day's workshop, so that in this sense, first of all, the scientists are able to portray those credible facts, provide the information. The journalists are able to receive this information. They are able to ask. They are able to question. And then there is information provided so that there is a closer relationship in terms of trying to access. This one of the things we said is that the data must be accessible. It can't remain in the journal articles or the department report. It needs to be made available, but in an accessible format. And this is what the feedback that we've had is that this is particularly helpful because our science journalist, specific specialized science journalist base, is very, very slim in our country. We have health journalists who have to report on science and crime journalists who have to report on science as if the beat is needed and the need is there. But actually specialized, media houses can't afford to have sometimes only journalists specializing in science. Some can, but some can't. But we need a much broader base from which to draw. And so we have found that this relationship that we're starting to build with journalists in terms of access to science information has been a positive one. Workshops or taking university innovations, in this case, the Hydrogen and HISA South Africa, working through the universities like the University of Western Cape and TUT out in Pretoria, you find that innovations that are coming, this is the hydrogen tricycle. You might have seen it at the budget speech as well as the SA Germany event that we had. It's an innovation. Young students were working on it, innovative capability, and the message with the scientists goes out into communities besides just telling them what it does, but why it's important and how young professionals can get involved in this kind of cutting-edge innovation. So it really, it travels, and that's not just a pun because it's a bicycle, but it actually does travel way beyond the lab into the community. This is the kind of supporting material that would be provided not for journalists, for other fields, for the audiences that we interact with. And then our partners in all of this, besides the science centers and the other outreach, would be our national facilities, and we've spoken about them. But you know the radio telescope Hartrau, you could see it opens its facilities to learners and educators and to public audiences on the weekend in terms of making the message, but it also has an outreach program. Down the road, you have the Timber Labs doing much of the same, but you know that's a restricted environment. You can't take public into the Itumba Labs environment, but you do still want to convey the message that we need nuclear scientists as well in terms of, and so there's, you can see here, using role models who are going to convey the message of it's not impossible for somebody in the community to become a nuclear scientist, and this would be the supporting material. And if any of you are reading the African Business Review, you would have seen this last week came out. They did an article in the African Business Review on the South African Astronomical Observatory, and this is really doing, as you saw from its budget as well, extensive work in getting young people interested in science, but also development, especially in Sutherland, in terms of community development that has taken place in Sutherland. The community center is now up and running. The computer center is up and running. All of it supported through SAO. So there's really good work being done there. The National Zoological Gardens, it's almost its chief mandate, using the platform, using the animals to look at conservation and biodiversity, as well as the South African Institute of Aquatic Biodiversity. Here they go mostly to fishing communities, to communities that are looking very close at encouraging sustainable practices as far as fishing and those resources are concerned. Cyan, you know, is concerned with long-term ecological data collection, and so a lot of their work is done with schools in their particular nodes. This would be one in the Phalaborwa region, their node out in Phalaborwa, where they run, at each of their nodes, they run science camps in ecological long-term observations, set up monitoring devices in schools around Phalaborwa, and work very closely with the communities. The Johannesburg Observatory is not a facility, although I put it here at the end, but it is an amazing site. If you're in Johannesburg and need to visit it, just contact us. We sometimes don't appreciate it as a site. But it is housing a 110-year telescope, which can still function for public audiences, not for research, but for public audiences. You do have public. And the in conjunction with the amateur association, the astronomers in those associations, this site that we inherited when that first slide that I showed you came into the NRF is being used. It still needs to be developed. It needs to be used more extensively, but at the moment it is a site that is available and that is slowly being regenerated to bring back public audiences in their numbers to that area. You can go through that and see that we have active international collaborations working with a number of countries, working with the DST International Office as well in terms of supporting countries in terms of developing their own National Science Week and science centers, etc., and then internationally mostly for capacity development. The KPIs is looking at what we, and remember these are science advancement KPIs for the NRF in terms of everybody faster, the national facilities, and how we would try to reach those numbers. And they are just given as overall numbers, not unpacked in terms of those four divisions I gave you, in terms of performance, participation, talent identification, and career awareness. The way forward for us, I think, in terms of the mandate, we still believe that this is a very important area. And in terms of the work that we've done to develop and continue to develop as the leading science advancement agency, promoting and communicating the value and impact of science in this dynamic knowledge economy. We're working with the department and the broader sector in terms of some things that need attention going forward. As we had in the beginning when we were asked to put forward the mandate issues, the legislative gap is recognized, it is in discussion, and it is dependent upon other processes taking place in the system. The strategy development is on the table and will be ongoing this year. The investment guidance framework has been provided and is being considered in line with other priorities in the system. As I've said, the Johannesburg Observatory is a platform that is available, needs to be developed, as is the Life Science Center within the National Zoological Gardens. And an area that we do want to see grow, develop, is some investment in research into public engagement of science, not just the active implementation, but that our implementation starts to be based on trend data, cohort analysis, media monitoring, audience analysis. What do they want to hear? Where are the gaps? What do we need? What type of information is going to be provided? So those are the more strategic issues besides the ongoing programs that will take place. So thank you very much. I think I've kept into your time. So.
Yeah, you have actually well tried. I think it would be fair to give everyone here a 5 minutes break so that we can have some coffee there and some relief, and then we can come and engage on the discussion. Because the tea came a bit late, and some people have not had time. It would be disruptive when we are in session, and people are up and down the I think it's 5 minutes, you can finish up the coffee and see and put them in front of them, so that's the 5 minutes, and then start and everything. Those who want to relieve themselves of the cultura and the toilet.
You must sit here. Oh, yep. There's something coming there.
All right, okay, I believe it. You say so. Why are your hands so cold? You can't get there very easy. You get you some
lemon.
Lemon. Is there lemon? Oh, that's good. Should I can do it for you. No milk, no sugar. Robust lemon. I don't know if it's there.
Because but there's more edges. Good morning, Mother.
Okay.
Say good on you.
Yeah.
Yes, it'll be back each of the TV members and dancers for five minutes. But I think once you've just joined now.
Yeah.
It was like really wonderful when we start going. We normally take the PPC members to the side, like to SKA.
Okay.
Just to go to the tunnel and to look at the telescopes in the night. And then there's a real appreciation there.
Yes.
Even to go and see them, you see the signs of the epiphany. I
mean, well, I mustn't.
We need to create a chain in business knowledge and
assembly.
All that indigenous knowledge is unexplored.
Yes.
You know? There's a whole world waiting to be unwrapped.
Okay. Yes. It's very interesting. As a language.
Yeah, higher education. I thought higher education comes to the party as
well. No, that's wonderful. That's wonderful.
I think you're all sick, actually. Now, the chair said you were all sick. You're just recovering. Now I understand why he said that.
Why did you say what?
He said the committee members are all sick. He's right, obviously.
Good.
I wish you'd warned me. It's inedible. I think it's last week.
I think we should continue in the interest of time. Everybody has been able to access some fuel for the stomach. Right. We've had a good presentation from Safta, and I think that it's now time to interact with them. If members have got some inputs to make into the presentation, this is the opportunity. Probably make you aware that NRF has got some bags left behind that are full of the detailed information should any member be interested in understanding the details, so that you, in the interest of time, we shouldn't be asking things that are already in the packages. Members can read through them. Here, I think we need just some point of clarification, if at all, understanding the issues that are misunderstood. Without wasting time, I will allow members to interact with the current sister. I see Honorable Smith there, Honorable Clinton, too. that order. Subsequent question can come after that. We are open to any question of the place.
Thanks, Jeff. I'd like to echo your thanks for the presentation. I think it was very good, very interesting, very encouraging, actually. I really enjoy hearing what you do. This is so important to the future of our innovation plans for the country. And if we don't get it right here, the rest goes nowhere. So the more this works, the better for everybody. But just some specific questions. This legislative gap, it really interests me that it's been allowed to sit there for so long. I mean, it's not as if this committee never processes legislation. There's corrective bits of legislation coming through regularly. So I know there's a review, and the reviewer says, look, partly where you should be located and so on, but really, I mean, this has been going back for many years. It's not like the gap arose yesterday. This gap's been there for a long time, so I'm not quite sure why that issue hasn't been addressed in the past, irrespective of the longer-term review. This legislative gap, I think it's that what you refer to the legislative gap at the end? The one where...
Sorry, I can respond to that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the whole issue of their mandate. Okay. You know, they don't have a legislative mandate. They're imputing it from a broader thing. That's, you know, whether this is enabling or not, the founding act is enabling and so on. I just find that whole thing rather messy from a legislative point of view, and I don't know why it's been allowed to sit so long.
In fact, as a matter of intervention, it's important. We also, as a committee, need to revisit the NRF Act because it has also many gaps that we need to realign our people.
Then, if I look at slide 13 on your funding, it really strikes me. I mean, you made a throwaway line as you concluded your discussion on it to say that, you know, the MRF. The MTEF levels have remained basically unchanged, but that's a remarkable thing, too. I mean, over a six-year period, your increase in the MTEF is marginal. And in fact, if it were not for the contract stuff, you'd cease to do business. Now, that's not a question, I suppose, to be directed to you, more to the department. But what has been the status of engagement over the years with Treasury in this for your proper MTEF funding? This seems quite anomalous to me. You gave a couple of slides where you indicate. Let me ask this one on slide 15. You know, you had the picture of the circle with the three areas of activity: education and blah blah blah. It seems that the bulk of what you do is on the education of the three areas. The bulk is education. I mean, is there a particular reason for that in policy? Have you determined as an organisation that we're going to devote 70% of our efforts to education and 30 somewhere to the others, or is it just an accident of history or what? Could that apply to funding, I suppose, and resources generally? Just trying to make sense of these things here. There were two slides you showed. The first is slide 25, and there was another one much further on about Mpumalanga, where you have an exercise which has national reach, but the figures from one particular province is dramatically higher than the rest. So like on slide 25, you're looking Eastern Cape, you know, this identifying SET talent, you know, they're sitting up there at 9,000, and the next highest is 3,000, you go right down to 154. Now to what do you attribute this different responses? And the other one later on was in Mpumalanga too, where it had 80,000 something, I don't remember now, compared to a much lower figure for everybody else. Is that based upon yourselves at a macro national level in terms of how you target things, or was it the response of people down there? You had this slide, which is easy to do this one here. Yeah? Now you start off with 7,000 odd people in your program, and you end up with 572 doing an SET first level course. So that's like a 7% throughput into something successful, which I think is actually a pretty good rate. But what does that tell you in terms of your program there? Because this wasn't really like a structured program for this purpose. This is just, the way I understand it, you were simply tracking something and you happen to come up with this. But what does it tell you from a policy level, and also your tracking studies, in fact, of where you need to concentrate your activities to get the biggest bang for your buck to get the SET students that you need? And then just lastly, these figures right at the end on slide 53, these the KPIs. It wasn't clear to me because you show actual figures for 8-9 and 9-10, 10-11. Then on the 11-12 side, how what's the actual there? Be very interested to see, because some of these figures, the escalation is quite dramatic. So I wanted to see if you were maintaining that. Thank you.
I just have got the question for now. The second, I think was
around. Can you chair, let me also ask the association of the leadership that was quite good with our family conscious. I'm waiting, that was going to connect that to one of the questions that I'm going to ask. My questions will be more on public and Lena area. In page 25, and unfortunately now I've lost it out of the particular order, is that I don't know, Chair, I really felt now intimidated about your comments about the partnership behind. Because I wanted to check if in slide 25, there is a table on science, grade 6 to grade 9. Obviously, I'll be interested. Focus will be more on my problem by side account. Do you have a breakdown of the breakdown in terms of these grades 6 and 9? Schools where you remember that our system of education is still a bit of a challenge. You have the monastery schools, private schools, schools in the rural areas. Do you in the package, do you have that you unpack the 809 so that we really start to understand? I'm using that because science has always been a domain of the rich, white men. And I'm happy to hear that in your with what the administration is endeavor in ensuring that we can achieve them. But obviously, the reason is that that's why I was interested in the idea and taking of this, because remember that there was constituent areas that we are allocated, and in those, there are budgets with science to be carried. The second one is more aligned to what Honorable Smith is asking. Obviously, the focus is support in education, according to the education, whether basic or higher education. But I'll more be on the support. In your support, what you have been making, have you ever looked into the issue of career guidance? We may speak about what again, where are these learners from which area, from which community? Whether we like it or not, it's something that we can never run away from. Otherwise, we'll be just the legislatures that are just here to say yes, no, yes, no. We have got different ideological interests and ideas, and therefore the issue of, as you are moving forward, assisting with this, supporting the Department of Higher of Basic Education, I'll make an example. Have you ever looked into the course? That's where we have got a serious challenge on. There is a slide here that talks about parents. I'm a self-taught IT. I taught myself how to open my computer, I taught myself how to read my emails, I taught myself how to Google. Because the system of education, very few, those that have managed to be where they are, it's because of a number of, we've got a living example of an activist who ended up being a nuclear physicist. Yes. He was, when we were trying to make our research, but how did he, but no, in fact, he was deepening his struggle. And as an activist, and that
yourself as parents in your document. I am not picking up. I don't know whether it has got in the package, but do you have adult science schools, like night schools? Remember the old days of night schools? Now we are talking about science schools. Because those children, our grandchildren, they come to us. They are going to want to be assisted by us. And we don't have a good. I'm a health worker by profession. But if somebody comes to me and asks me about galaxies and whatever, or galaxies, I don't have, I'm not trusting. Now, that parent who is in education, who is not a domestic worker, who is a factory worker, who never had in the talking with the basic or higher education, have you ever thought of ensuring that as you are spreading this to the public, for this public to understand that in fact life is changing. It's all about technology, it's all about science, what they are doing. In fact, I always make an example that when somebody is little up, that old mama in the rural areas making fire, boiling water, is she aware that in fact that's science? And she won't be able to know if then they are also that's where my interest is, that have you ever thought, and if you haven't, I would want to make a proposal, Chair, that I think it's going to be important that together with yourselves and the Department of Higher Education, look into the adult science employment, because that is going to be really important. Very few, even members of parliament for that matter, I'm not apologetic and of saying that I learned science in my own way and I decided to learn it on my own way. It's Honorable Nobo, who knows all the things, but for me is how does science and technology change the social condition of that ordinary person, either in the rural areas, in the farm areas. The last question is, I see here you're told that in the slides where people are being taught of science things, the agricultural science, which unfortunately is the African child who thinks that agricultural science is for somebody who's in the farmer and rural. So I'm raising this because you are in an area of support, and therefore it goes back to the issue of the career guidance and whatever. Otherwise, Chair, it's one of those presentations that really makes you to have more interest in this. The last one, Chair.
No questions in
time. There is a slide here. Yeah. I'm uncomfortable because it takes us back. But science is for people that are elite. September thing. Yes, what is that thing that you want to join? The elite. The elite. And that thing for me, it's got an ideological challenge with that, because it brings us back that in fact science is for the elite. Otherwise, thank you, Chair.
Just a follow-up, she has touched very interesting, but one of those sensitive areas. The last one she talked about, I thought I'll talk about it, but she has already raised it. We must not be a science system that is going around poaching the so-called brilliant students to be in science. This is what she's talking about. We must be a science system that is able to develop a daughter of a rural peasant into a director of a space station. You see, we shouldn't be, because there are many factors that lead to children being assessed as poor results. There are many factors that affect. So we have to move away from the system of focus of the past, where we only are looking for those students with good results, so regardless of how they got the good results. We need to promote talent as long as there is a thing where I came from, where we were trained during the old days in Dusanze. He said, as long as you are not insane, we can train you to anything inside. Because that is what we are supposed to build, that type of an attitude. So it is just a follow-up of what is not a question. I was just trying to stress the point. Another point which is raised, it's very much also important, is this thing of promoting the cutting-edge science, which probably, although it has got some economic spin-offs at the end, or probably the science spin-offs in a new world order. But we overlook very important day-to-day science activities that can quickly address the problems of our economy, like agricultural science, where we have a problem of managing attitudes and perceptions, which has already been a complaint that has been raised by the U.S. of Pretoria to us, that your black students have a problem, don't want to join agricultural science for a related profession. They think that it is they associate it with rural and or rural farming or things like that. Veterinary science, they said they want, they prefer to be medical doctors of human beings and of cows and cattle. You know, they prefer to go to civil engineering rather than agronomy, because agronomy is for farming and things like that. So I think these are very important questions she's raising. Actually, I was about to say, I'll say when my time comes. these are very, very important areas here, right? Including soil. It's all about agriculture, soil science. Very, very important thing. No concentration is there for developing soil science specialists and related things. Understanding or soil analysis, very important for even climate change. Thank you.
Thank you. It's my turn now. No, I don't mind. I would like to agree with you. Thank you for the presentation. Before I start asking my questions, I would also like to raise a link to what you said, the previous member said, is the focus is mainly on the physical sciences or the economic and whatever, but what about the human sciences and social sciences? We are well aware of this report commissioned by the Minister of Higher Education and Training regarding the human sciences. And your Olympiad, for instance, doesn't focus on the human. The statistics you gave us regarding different professions and whatever. But in any case, let me start with my question. The first one is on slide 10. I would like to know more about your involvement in the Naledi schools. What kind of support do you give them? What are the successes and the challenges of these schools? What exactly is the state of these schools at the moment? I don't think all the schools perform that well. I would like to have more on that, please elaborate on that. And also, are you involved or do you interact with the STEM schools in the Western Cape? Are you aware of the STEM schools in the Western Cape? Then, the slide on page 12, funds and education. That is my pet topic, obviously, because I was also on the two other portfolio committees previously. Are you aware of this institute that was established in 2010 by the Basic Education Department called the National Institute or the National Curriculum Institute? Do you interact with them? Are you aware of the existence of this institute? I think it's important that you should know about this institute, because during the past 2 years since the establishment in 2010, done that you think we haven't heard from them. Then on page 18, again, you started off with learners and educators. Now, I would like to know exactly what kind of support do you give to and what interaction is there between you and educators specifically? What kind of support do you give? And it links to the slide on page 20. You've dealt with paragraph one, or support learner performance, and then you've mentioned it's related to the curriculum. And then the opposite part of your table, you refer to, apart from the learner camps, you refer to educator workshops. Now, I would like to know, if you focus on the curriculum, do you pick up shortcomings in the curriculum? And you've mentioned, you've used the word on content. What about the content? Shortcomings, do you advise them as to how they should change the curriculum specifically regarding content? Because I think it's where we should start. Obviously, yes, you give them resource materials, but the main thing is the content. That is the axis of education. You've mentioned the science festivals. I would like to know the Grahamstown Festival. It was reported in the media a few months ago. Are you intimately involved in the Grahamstown Festival, and do you send out invitations, for instance, to the members of the portfolio committee, also to all the other festivals or exhibitions or whatever? And then my colleague on my left mentioned this issue regarding career guidance, and I presume it's connected to this final paragraph on slide 20. You refer to career educational resource material. And my question was also on do you work with the career initiatives, or with the career guidance initiatives done by basic education as well as higher education? And then on page 26, the Olympiad, you briefly mentioned the primary schools. I would like to know exactly what does it entail? You know, we hear about these Olympiads. What exactly is it? The ones for grade 10 to 12 as well as the primary schools. And then you've mentioned the fact that Educon, with the withdrawal of the Educon funding. Now, you've mentioned here on this slide that Educon is actually funding this Olympic. What is going to happen now? Are you going to be short when it comes to funding? And then on 47, you've mentioned the community development in Sutherland. Exactly what does it entail? And do you plan something similar when it comes to the Meerkat and the SKA environment, Narvin, Williston, and so forth? Thank you.
Chair, all members, thank you, Chair. I must also add my voice to all the voices starting from you, Chair, and all my colleagues, to thank the NRF and SALSA for the wonderful presentation. Two questions. They are related, of course, to my constituency work. March. I don't know, it's page 23, isn't it? So I'll start there. I think it's about the Naledi schools in both Alfred Nzo and O.R. Tambo. And if they can just advise which schools in particular, so that you're in my oversight, I can be able to visit those schools in those municipalities. The second one, Chair, they also referred to something in Lusiki City. What is this? They also referred about the school in Lusiki City. one is before this slide. I don't know where this page, but there's something that... Science speak on someone. There's something about Lucy speaking somewhere. 23. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Lusiki Siki. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, yeah, yeah. Thanks. I think that's what happens when our Tambo, Lusiki Siki and Mantele, yeah, those schools. Then the second one says on page 29, Science Center Network. I see in the nine provinces there are big science centers. I'm curious to know why in the two it happens that there's none, there's only small science centers. Anything in particular that is Northern Cape and Eastern Cape? Yeah, that is awesome. That's all.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you to the team for the wonderful presentation. Yeah, my question is on start with page 8, the public engagement, but I link it with page 34. Firstly, when you go to the public and you engage the public, you've got different age group in your public, and then you talk about science, and you come back to your slide 34, page 34. You talk about parental influence. Now I'm asking myself, parental influence and the public engagement. All the presentations, when we started and up to the end, there was nothing about indigenous knowledge. And in terms of your parental influence, the science that they have is most indigenous knowledge. So I think if you talk about public engagement and you involve all the different age groups, indigenous knowledge has to be part of your presentation when it comes to parental guidance and your public engagement. So your presentation lacks the indigenous knowledge part. Yeah, so if that also can maybe create, how do we involve the elderly people, because they are scientists, mostly the indigenous knowledge part of it. Thank you.
This honorary member has, I was showing my secretary, she has taken right from my mouth.
Well, what's the secretary on the same page?
because actually that is also what I noted, that I had never heard anything on indigenous knowledge systems in the whole presentation, which I thought it was a very basic thing faster. Because that's from where everything starts. You see, this honorable member, it means he lives in my stomach. Okay, thank you. At least then I'm one question minor from what I wanted to say. But as most of the honorable members have noted, it's quite a very good presentation, but actually it was for that reason why we thought that we must give you this platform, because SASA is very, very important in all the vision that we have in science and technology establishment. The vision 2018, what even the Department of Basic or Higher Education has, without a proper directed input from NRF at a level from SASA to everything else, because even our space technology policy circulates around what NRF is doing. The very important profession that you're talking about, nuclear science and everything, these are all the competencies of NRF in terms of skills development. Without Vision 2015 and beyond, we are nowhere. It's just theory without practice. So it's very important. So what I wanted, we are having a policy conference very soon. And a policy conference is very important because it sets out the direction of where we will be going in terms of government. And so we, as a science committee, we also want to understand what are the challenges that you want to be looked into in terms of policy development in skills. So it would need to have such an input from yourselves. That's the first thing. Another thing, once you have some of these science awareness programs, I've not been able to make a linkage with what they have overseas and how much are you working at international level to develop local programs. I've just been invited, I'm coming from Holland, Netherlands, where I was invited in a very strategic workshop, which was a one workshop supported by the European Union. It's called EU Universe Awareness Program. And they orientated young kids from age of four in astronomy. So, and these are some of the things where we must find out. I was just thinking because I was asked to go and give a paper of where we are in South Africa in terms of this, our science system, what is it doing, in developing policy along these lines. Because they feel that astronomers are in a universal community that has to work together, so they can't develop that. EU universe awareness without South Africa, which has got the best guides for that purpose, by the way. So that's why they want us always to be central when they develop astronomical strategies. So I just wanted to find out that, but that is not only the only thing. I also have been invited by the Astronautical Federation, which is about the space exploration, not stars, the space itself. In the conference we first attended with the WIP in Prague, WIP, we were there in the Prague one, you see, when we went to Prague, yeah. So, and we also did recently, I think, here was it 2011 or 2010? 2011. Now, and one of the things that you have noted in that Congress, there is always a component of students from all over the world except us. They have got their sessions, they are put into awareness, they are put into space program, they have got projects. Some of them, they are even launching some of the projectors into space as part of their training. But I have not seen anybody from us. And actually, they have ended up approaching me. Why are you not supplying students for this program in South Africa? In fact, this year they said, please bring 12 students into this program. And then I spoke to DSA, I spoke to the University of Pretoria, our vice chancellor. We need to have students here. They are programs of the world. They are training young students, and where are we? Why are we not contributing this? Are you not aware of that? And they said they were not aware of that. But NRF is supposed to be aware of it. And so this year, this Congress, the Astronomical Congress, is going to be held in Italy, in Naples, Italy. And they need a transfer, but of course now it's closed, because they closed in February. the admission, I mean the assessment or the acceptance of those that would be put there. But it's a very important initiative that the Astrological Federation and Congress have started to not to leave our youth behind, to go with the youth. The youth there, they've got so many important programs. By the way, we are leading in astronomy. I did not know that. I knew when I went to the Netherlands that South Africa is leading in space in astronomy. So but we don't have these components in developing our youth. So we depend on international collaboration rather than developing our own local talent. So I think we have to, it's a part of the thing that we must put into the next policy documents, which must govern the science system. We must think along those lines. Okay, we've already discussed that. I think another member, Junjo, has covered about the elite thing. I also had that in mind. The AKS has already been covered. The last one, the school that we have referred to, the chief has just referred to, I think that's also very important because we also have constituencies and we work with it. We suppose, especially we who are members of this committee, who work with you directly, we are supposed to make you visible to come to our constituencies and espouse some of these programs to our own schools and constituencies. We have we always in my constituency when school start, I have to round up all the schools, and they give us a lot of the number of problems they have and challenges, which I think if we were to invite you, you could probably come with some ready-made solutions. So I think it's very important that you must be visible first in the constituency where we work, because we know what you are doing. Yeah, all of us outside the party line, anybody. Yeah, we need to use your competency in our constituencies first, and let our constituencies become a sample for the country. Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much. I think with that input, and as I said, you know, if some of these details you have are in those things, you don't need to elaborate on them. You just refer as it. Well, that you'll find it in the package that was prepared for you. And so for that, we save that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honourable members, and thank you, Chair. Let me begin by firstly expressing our appreciation the fact that you have almost everyone from the DPC, the interest that you show in this area. We actually enjoy coming to present to you because of the passion that the members bring, irrespective of their constituency. Because, you know, whenever we present, we ask ourselves what's best for the country, and I think that's the big picture. But let me begin by also indicating that should there be further questions, you are most welcome to email us, and if you require information, we are very willing to provide the information should you not find it readily available. I want to deal firstly with the high level the legislative part, etc., and the Endowed Act, and then my colleagues, Beverly and Jabu, who's the new MD of SASTA, as well as Dr. Matutu from the DSP, may want to respond and add as well. Okay, but I'm sure a large part of the question, the details Beverly and Jabu will take care of. Honourable Member Smith, you refer to the legislative gap. It's exactly that's what we were referring to. Fortunately, PPC last year we met to make the cosmetic changes to the NRF Act, and the cosmetic changes dealt with issues like remove the president, the word president, and let it be a CEO and the deputy president or vice president to a deputy CEO. It also dealt with the terms or the tenure of the board, etc. So those changes were made. The substantive changes are apparently going to be made, and one of the items that's on the agenda regarding the United Act, and this is a conversation that we had with the DSD, is precisely the science engagement mandate. We recognize the importance of it, irrespective that it's not articulated the mandate. We saw the importance of it and therefore escalated science advancement to make it fully into the corporate structure of the NRF and start being a business unit. So even if it's spun out of the NRF, cetera, you know, where you choose other ministries, et cetera. Really, that's the evolution of it, so be it. But we have to position it strategically so that it evolves into something that actually serves this country in a more holistic manner. And therefore, I'd like to say up front that I remind ourselves about the United mandate and what we can work with. Also remind ourselves about the resource we have. All the kinds of passionate questions we ask also tug at our heart. I mean, we want to do the things that are basic at school level, at high school level, etc. But the Department of Science and Technology is not charged with operating in those areas per se. We have to bring the Department of Basic Education on board. We have to bring the Department of Higher Education and Training on board in order to allow us. The second question you raised in terms of the MTS funding, that there hasn't been growth, and that a large part of our work is contract-driven. That is an accurate assessment. But I must say, to the credit of DSP, we now in conversation, and the Minister has indicated, to try to give us a non-contract-driven budget so that you can be more strategic in the way you position yourself. So the kinds of schools that you see coming, that are attended to, etc., is often dictated by a sponsor within a contract, etc. So in terms of strategy, in terms of reach, we're also constrained because when you're contract-driven, you are restricted. You have to meet the terms of the contract. So I just want to put that in perspective. However, there's discussions that are ongoing with the DSP whereby we look at this to try to create the DSP. The indigenous knowledge, I'd like to focus on the indigenous knowledge since Chair, you've raised it, and Honourable Member Flighty has raised it. And I think it's important that I need to give you a kind of status report on indigenous knowledge. It is one of the priority areas, as you can see, even in the mandate, in all fields of science and technology, including indigenous knowledge. If we do not focus on indigenous knowledge, we're going to lose a huge opportunity in terms of development, not just of science and technology, but of education. And I'll give you examples of where this is. It may not have featured here in this presentation, but there's many examples of indigenous knowledge. I mean, I was speaking to an honorable member from the Eastern Cape about astronomy. The indigenous knowledge that's associated with astronomy, where our forefathers could predict weather patterns by looking at the night skies, etc., by tracking movement, there's a huge reservoir, untapped, that has to be unleashed. But of course, we need to then say, what resources do we have to develop a center of excellence or a center of competence in indigenous knowledge? How do we do it across the sector? So once again, it's also about having enough resources to do that. We have resources which are investing in indigenous knowledge at the moment. It's within the purview of four universities, mostly rural-based universities, that are looking at various systems. And we try to grow that so that we have enough critical mass to be able to establish a center of excellence in the long term. ICS is also very important in terms of basic science. And I'll give you an example. There's an ex-student of mine now, Dr. Paul Mukena. He's at the Durham University of Technology, and he worked in computational chemistry, but he also looked at fermentation. Now, the simple act of making amaheu, or homemade porridge, or brewing, there's huge science in there. How do our parents know that they need to cover that with a blanket to keep it warm? Because it's temperature-driven. How do they know they have to have moisture there? Because the fungi that ferment need water. You know? So those indigenous systems are now being looked at more carefully. So it's actually written in the paper. You can't glean this from textbooks. So you have to go into the rural community to find out exactly how do they ferment. How can they change those practices to enhance fermentation? So there's youth science. I mean, a simple thing of taking turmeric powder and putting it on a wound to heal it, if it were scratched, etc. That indigenous knowledge is now being made into aquafresine as a disinfectant that's used to treat sores, etc. So I totally agree with you that indigenous knowledge must find its way. And I think the message is well taken by us at TrueSoft as well to incorporate this feature into science and engagement and science and policy.
In addition to that, I think the chief here and many of those that have grown up in rural areas, they will tell you the indigenous technology of filtering. Where the Mkumboji is filtered very cleanly than any other filter with that particular. I was surprised that in the era of housing they don't have that, they don't even know about it. So you see, that's the industrial vision versus indigenous knowledge. Now, it's very, very important, therefore, why I was saying, because I'm coming from a very big workshop in Northwest, where these methods, and the Minister of Higher Education, Deputy Minister of Higher Education was also there, and she is very much in support of these systems being disseminated into schools from basic to higher education. As a result, they announced there, because there's a research chair on indigenous authorities, Professor Kaya there in Northwest, and they have established a program which is going to be launched next year, understandably. The first bachelor's degree on indigenous knowledge systems is going to be offered from next year at the University of Venda and in Northwest. And they are saying that the difference, because there's always been this kind of parasitic studies on indigenous knowledge systems, like a BA indigenous knowledge system, because maybe to just focus on rural the development. And that's why indigenous knowledge systems have always been confined to a rural perception rather than the knowledge system, you see. So because they've always confined the parasitically ready to a BA degree, which has got a focus on how to do rural things, you see. And that's why even students have got an attitude about going for that. But now they are developing a program which is going to be a BSc kind, a science-related program, which is going to be looking from basic training, from basic education to high school, training in indigenous knowledge, science, and systems. And then are reaching out into a university degree, which is called BIKS degree, Bachelor of Indigenous Knowledge. Not a BA in that, but a bachelor, like a B engineer, Bachelor of Engineering, you see. So that's what they have. It's going to be in two universities as from next year, Northwest and I think Venda, because also the environment is conducive for such a degree there in those two. That's what they say. But this is what you must have in mind as NRF, because you are tasked with this type of skills development.
Chair, the IKF is very aware of. I actually shared the information which I sent to CBC. You would see in the new allocation of research chairs, there's a minimum of 5 research chairs in indigenous knowledge, because we feel it's a high priority. On the question that you raised about astronauts, okay, you will remember that South Africa last year hosted the International Astronautical Conference, okay, and we had Major Powell, who is the head of NASA. He's a black African-American. I met with him. Charles Bolden. Okay. He's the head of NASA, and he's come here, and he's now retiring. And I said to him, you know what, you can be an inspiration. He actually went to schools, to rural-based schools in our country, to inspire those students to do, to be astronauts. Mm-hmm. And so that message has gone out, and there's been calls. So we're very much aware of that, and we've been hugely lauded for the way that conference was run and the content of that conference. So, you know, universities do get this information. Whether they act on the information is beyond our purview. But I think, you know, Honorable Member Klopper raised something very important and certainly the whip about clear guidance. One of the saddest things that happened in our education system is they removed guidance counselors from schools. I mean, there are no guidance counselors. And now more than ever, we need those guidance counselors at school. But they constitute by the absence. So it's something that we need to address with the Department of Education. But also, if you think about SKA as being, you know, the pinnacle of what we're going to do, is there anything in the curriculum on astronomy that actually inspires them from that age? So, you know, it's multifaceted and it's difficult to deal with everything all together. But I think what would save us in the long term is that if we reverse the science vote, whereby all the ministries, irrespective of what ministry you are, where the money for R&D, for educational development, comes to one stream so that we can be more strategic in our approach as to how we deploy those funds for the benefit of the country. So hopefully I think that's in discussion.
I think it's an appropriate having the time and discussion here. I'm coming from a workshop in Durban, and I was present. I was at the rest on Monday. Yesterday, the minister was supposed to be here. Today, Professor Majozi, and the Minister of Education and the President are going to be the keynote address and today. Now, I went through some of the things that were lectured by the Major General Charles Baldwin about space, because I'll talk about SKA, some of the things that should. There was a big interest in students. Actually, they ended up saying that they needed the DVDs, which they had the DVDs there, you know, they were displaying about what is happening here in the sky. And I thought I'll speak to you too, so that there are 142 schools, high schools, or just of a middle size from that region called Inc. You know, Ina and Abamashu, I don't know, but it's a very big region. And this is actually a competence of NRF, in particular, SAMHSA. And so if we can get some of those activities, and we supply so the students have got a feel of what this SKA is all about and where it is going, and where is South Africa in terms of astronomy, for instance. Very important.
Where do I start? I think besides the detail of the programs, I think many of your questions focus around the issue of education. And the challenge is what is actually the purview of the Department of Basic Education and the role that, the supporting role the Department of Science and Technology through ourselves will play. And it is a space which is negotiated province by province and district by district. I must put it on the table. And so it really does depend on, we have these programs, but the difference, you raised the question about why is the big spread in provinces on different programs. It really does depend on the province. So the one where you saw Mpumalanga had a greater participation rate, and Mpumalanga Department of Education on that particular project put in their own funding in addition to DSD and Southwest London. Now, another province might not have that capability, and therefore the spread would not be that high. So it also depends on whether you can get access to, you know, many schools in districts, far-reaching districts. In some provinces, as you know, the system works very well, and so you could, you know, they welcome you with open arms. In other provinces, it's a little difficult to work through the layers until you can get, because basically you need the schools and the teachers, you know, but you've got to bypass the layers. So the aim would be eventually, in another area, for example, like Gauteng, the Gauteng Department of Education invests considerable amounts of money in Saibono to carry out the type of work that we are doing here. So you won't go back into a province that is already doing a lot of work, but you, not that they're reaching everybody, but there is a lot going on. So you make strategic choices about where to go, how to reach the more rural communities, and also how you can navigate that system. So the difference in provinces is multifaceted. You know, it's not our plan to only target one. It's a national reach, but the way we have a national department, but education is governed at province level. And so provinces and then into districts will determine how you... So some you can move easier than others, and others just take a longer time, so maybe over 3 years instead of over 1 year. And some provinces have needs and therefore take up projects much more readily than others. And it really does depend. But the continuation, you know, many would look at and say, well, you see a lot of Eastern Cape problems on the TV, and yet some of the work that we've been able to do there with individual districts as opposed to the entire province is amazing in terms of the kind of work that needs to be done. So it really is a mixed bag. You also asked the question of why the bulk on education. We recognize that, but I think it's one of it is contract funding. You know, if a sponsor comes to you and needs, that's it. The other is also the legacy of our system. The education needs of the country are just so dire. You know, and how do you swing away from, and science and technology and mathematics, physical science education, and NRF is linked to the science system. So the expectation is that you will provide role models, you will take scientists to the communities, and therefore it is school. But we, in the investment framework, do believe that the science communication budget needs to be swung in a different direction, that there is a great need for the broader communication that we are all, you know, I'm hearing around the table to take, how to get the public, how to have the conversations. Up until now, the nature of the business and how the money has come in has meant that it goes into education. Not that it's wrong, but it has been at the disadvantage of programs that can bring about broader science communication. And in the investment framework, we say we'd like a split that is different between, but this is rolled out from a needs basis. But I think strategically, and as we said, there's a strategy development on the table. Science communication, first of all, it's recognition as a discipline, because it is a discipline. I mean, internationally, it's a discipline. It's, you know, you have university departments, you have papers, you have students qualifying out of this. We're not at that stage yet. We don't have it as a formal discipline. It is part of, you know, areas that are studied. So there's a bit of work that we need to do to actually change that. You asked also about the KPIs in terms of estimated and actual. You know now the annual reports of institutions like the NRF must come to this committee, and so it's going through an audit process. But I'm pleased to say we scale those numbers already. But it also scales because the money's come in, as you've seen it. On a year when the money goes down, we'll be in a different situation of whether, and if the money is like that, then, you know, so. But we've really been able to achieve those targets. So, but it will come to the committee later in terms of the auditing process. There's a lot of questions on education, and as I say, that is something that has to be negotiated. We've put an emphasis on career education, but just how you work, we've worked on a needs basis in provinces where we can get inside the pact that we will leave. And the pact is not asking about detail for this. It's just a whole lot of information or a whole lot of materials that will give you a better sense of how, what is a curriculum material that we are actually putting out. What is the communication? For example, ma'am, as you say, we learn about science on our own, but if you look at this, this is a very simple, you know, cartoon type. But this is actually about nanotechnology, and it's really at a level that starts to engage younger learners. And if you look at how it's presented in a format that they are familiar with, and so that is what communication is about. It's taking the technologies but communicating them. So I'm hoping in this package lots that you're going to use in your own children and grandchildren, just to show them, you know, that. So this would go out to many, many schools in terms of this curriculum material. You'll be able to get an idea of the kind of curriculum material that we are working on. In terms of agriculture, Jobo especially has been working with the Agricultural Research Council, which is another of the science council, in terms of a booklet called Careers in the Agricultural Sciences. Now, you can say how far it is, but it is a conversation started because of that recognition, just what you say, you know, that there isn't. So we're profiling. So we said we've got careers in engineering, careers in space sciences, careers in biotechnology, and so the new booklet that we would put together now that's distributed far and wide and makes exhibitions that go out, careers in the agricultural sciences, working with the Agricultural Research Council. Because we can't provide you the detail of every project, indigenous knowledge has been one of the focus areas or one of the themes, sub-themes of the National Science Week for the last, I think it's since the 2000, the one that we've got. So the Department of Science and Technology has seen fit in its national program to put indigenous knowledge in there. And the theme for, you know, Science and Technology for Economic Development, which is the theme for the National Science Week, looks at indigenous knowledge's contribution to that particular theme. And it's part of the theme run out of that unit within the DST, the indigenous knowledge. So it is there, and it is to, but we didn't report on it specifically. When we say National Science Week, you know, it will encompass all of those subgroups. But we don't have a specific program on public engagement of indigenous knowledge. Now that would be something else, like we have for nanotechnology and biotechnology.
That is exactly what we hear as a comment.
That's what you want.
We are crying aloud that actually, because of the lack of information about indigenous knowledge system or the wrong perception that they are receiving out there, SALSA is very well placed to start making its central focus to communicate what indigenous knowledge systems are all about. They are not about rural people. They are about us as we exist in this industrial era or epoch. So that is what the committee says.
So maybe there will be another contract coming. So. But we take the message about that.
It should not be always for money, but you remember, we have the power now in this committee to influence budget. So if we talk soft with us, we can even think about how to talk to the treasury to have that for you
I think you also asked Mr. Smith about what do the case studies tell us. I think they reveal to us the gaps more. You know, we're encouraged by, first of all, the small start in tracking, because as you said, it's very difficult to track within the current system. Once somebody leaves school, we have no, you know, access to them at all. But I think it tells us that, first of all, the system needs to be better organized around career education, you know, because sometimes we provide career education, but then finance is an issue. So they've had all this information, they've been exposed to it, and then, you know, can they get bursaries to go into high? So it links to their ability to attract funding either through corporates or through the National Students Fund and that type of thing. So it is also multifaceted, but it also means you have to reach them much earlier, you know, in terms of being able to give a broad-based understanding. And whether you reach them through the school system alone, I don't think is the answer. I think you've got to reach them through a national conversation about science. How does the science get into the media? How do we approach science? The kind of communication that you're talking about, do you see the link between boiling water and its relation to science? Switching on the light, switching on the television, how does the cell phone work? You know, that might not take place in the classroom, but that definitely will take place through the science centers, through conversations that are had. So it is a multi, we call it a layered effect within SASTA. We say we need to try and get somebody to visit a science center, be part of a science Olympiad, take science at school, be exposed to a scientist, visit an industry or a national council or a research facility, and all of those layers might influence the decision in the end. But if you only have one intervention, you're hardly likely to change the situation. And sometimes on short-term funding, we might have one intervention rather than a layered effect, and that's it. We're not particularly connected to the NCI that you mentioned, although, you know, we will look it up and make, we work with the Western Cape Education Department, but not extensively. If you've seen those, you know, the layers there, the Western Cape Education Department, we work mostly through the areas that are accessed through ITIMBA and SAO. And so, you know, in some of it, there's a ruling here, you know, kids don't leave school during school hours. Teachers don't leave school during school hours. You go after school, Saturdays, and so you work within the system. How does the system work? And so we try to get around those kind of things. Grahamstown Science Festival, yes, it's funded by the DST as well, and partial funding from the DST, one of the main sponsors, so they are involved in that. But I will do. Will definitely take to Anya, the director, that the invitation should come specifically. I know it's a highlight on the calendar, and if you've not received an invitation personally, then it's an oversight. But we will ask that these invitations are sent now, because I think it is definitely a science festival you want to experience. You know, the opening and the lectures and things like that. So. If you have, my apologies for that, but I will pass on the message to the director of that. It's run independently, not through us, but supported by DST and ourselves. I just also want to say the UNAWARE, the EU Universal Way program run through SAAO extensively. And because of the success of that is why we also have the Office for Astronomy Development that the Federation has put here in South Africa. I mean, you know, it was a competitive process, and SAA won the bid almost to have the office located here in South Africa because of its connection through UNAWAY. So it's a project that the community is aware of and that they connect into in terms of the global market. Last year when the astronautical conferences was run here, all the science and awareness activities that were part of the conference were organized by ourselves. We sat on the operational committee, local organizing committee of the conference and connecting the facilities with, but it was done because it was held in South Africa, and, you know, the SAO after, or through Peter Martin, has started to get involved. But if, like you say, this year the conference is in Italy, we don't have as of the influence to now go and run those initiatives in Italy. But when it was here in South Africa, we organized, you know, the rocket launches, the CANSTATs, all of that was organized for a program funded by DST.
Yeah, but I do not, I don't understand why it's like that, because I can show you a number of messages that have been written to me that we are supposed to be part of that at all Congress. And as I'm saying, since we first attended from Parliament this conference from Seoul, we attended that in Seoul, in Prague, later South Africa, and then after that, this year is going to Italy. And ever since they have noted that, because they didn't even know that there was a Committee on Science and Technology, so they use the Trade and Industry Committee because of the Space Council located in Trade and Industry. And so once they knew, then they even better interest. Oh, there is even a Committee on Science which you are supposed to be dealing with. And so they have then told that the committee must they organize. We have seen a panel of students from the participating countries that come also have their own sessions guided by all this. And so that is exactly because SAO is very much even involved in that, but also in the European University, thing. It's also part of the partner. So we are supposed as South Africa to be in the leading structures of all these initiatives. And in particular, this one, they have tasked us that we need to have 12 students from here participating in that. And in fact, I said it was late now. And I thought that maybe SAO was also organizing that because they did send me early the notice. But they reminded me around February, it was 1 week before they closed. Then I understood it was later. I thought that the matter had been dealt with at that level. So I think, therefore, from now onwards, we must follow. But therefore, we can't attend, we can't have students for this Naples Congress. But in the subsequent one, because these are early Congress, we must start looking into that.
What we can do is in other information that is more detailed, like they asked the breakdown of the schools, we can provide those in writing, I think. And I think, you know, that is really most of the questions in terms of generally what has been asked. The detail we can provide.
Okay, thanks. I just want to clarify an issue about our intervention in the Nairobi schools. There are over 500 Nairobi schools across the country. But based on our agreement with DST, we are working mainly on the 18 schools adopted by the Department of Science and Technology, and there are two schools per province. Then we are focusing on those schools. And also in terms of career guidance, as the group executive indicated, there are a number of things that we are doing through role modeling, provision of relevant educational resource materials, where we profile role models, use that
you know, in the book that has kind of the tanks, and also through the funding that we received from the Department of Science and Technology, we're able to identify a number of role models across the country that are willing to be deployed to rural areas and go and interact there with learners focusing on careers in science, engineering, and technology.
But instead of silly questions, we actually have fun questions, but it's fun. It's a game, and they play it, and it's guys, and you know, it's really, it's all about, they 3 to 6, those little kids. And then some of the kids that we take into school, and these kind of, so this is like the science kit for electricity. So that, you know, especially those that don't have equipment, don't have labs, you can put it in this box. So if you have limited funding, you only put like 6 kits in a school, but if you have more funding, you can then do, you know, every class of kits. And so it's the scale at which you do these things. Right now, I think the scale is a bit small, but the ideas are brilliant, the scale might not be there. So it's a balance between actual formal, but because we are not the Department of Education, we support in different ways, but from the time. And trying to make it fun. Trying to make it exciting and motivating to actually want to do it and want to be a scientist or make a scientist or anything else that you can be as a software, it's agronomist or something like that. So the books, the bags contain different things. They are recyclable. You can take them on campus. Thank you very much.
Now, what you have here is what was a challenge to me when I went to this workshop. Because after I presented, I was followed by all the students all over the world. I was like a king of the bees. You know, and they wanted these things. Now, I had my booklets that I was showing in pictures, you know, some of these things like astronomy. But they are also my reference point because I only brought them from Europe when I went to Europe. So they wanted, but I think this is exactly the material that they need, you know. But how can they have the access to this material? How much do you have of this material?
Well, so the answer is very simple. We're resource limited.
Yeah.
The ideas are excellent. Okay. It has the power of reach. It has the power of demystifying science, etc. But the number of learners you reach, I mean, the Department of Basic Education and Training, the Department of Higher Education and Training, should come to the party and say, okay, fine, here's an amount for outreach or engagement, advancement. Then, of course, we can do it in a very articulated, in a very structured way. At the moment, we're just touching the tip of the iceberg. And I think, you know, you as honorable members of Parliament need to assist in making the case. As to be really serious about training the next generation of a representative science and technology workforce in this country, then you have to reach the poorest of the poorest. We have to reach those out in the recesses without having no classroom, no desk. And how do you do it? You can only do it if there's a willingness on the part of us as governments, you know, to take about this and make it resource driven. So we're not lacking ideas or approaches, etc. It's all that we have the recipe. We need to just resource the program. You see, I'm hoping that, because science is, I think from an NR perspective, community engagement and science engagement, we learn from the community. So therefore, it's a catalyst for human capital development, for knowledge generation, and for innovation. So that we don't like to use the word outreach, we say engage, because it's a two-way process. Outreach suggests a higher part than a lower part. We see them as equal parts of the community, and, you know, the stakeholders, because we learn in the process. So I'm hoping that you'd be able to take this. Talk about indigenous knowledge. We had to fight in London, in Egypt, with the British, because they equated indigenous knowledge to witchcraft.
Yeah.
And it was quite a huge battle, and it was surprising, but, you know, we had to do this thing. I think our dream is that if you look at what we're doing at the moment, it's when a child from Sutherland, from the community, with a sweet love for criminal, can go up to that site there, solve, and be a scientist there or an engineer, and then you know you've reached something. And I mean, that's a huge dream, but it can be done. So let me just finish by thanking all of you once again for your participation and attention. And I hope that you will be our ambassadors in your constituency, and that you will take this out there and let us know the need so that we can be more responsive.
Now, I want to say it in front of the committee. I've got a letter here. It comes from the Chief of Parliament in the SOP. And it is exactly about what you're saying. So I'm going to give it to you, and members must know that they want this type of a thing. There's one school which they say they identify the down in the southern region around the region, which really needs to be helped. And they have written a letter to you, the house chair of But otherwise, I think that this is one of the most interesting. We thought that it was going to finish around August 11. We underestimated the interest which is going to be raised by this presentation. But I think you articulated it also very well. That's why it is interesting. Because even if it is interesting, but if you are unable to relate it to members, then it would be boring. It is not boring because you related it very well, and we saw for ourselves where the areas of challenges are exactly, and where we can, from our base here, where we can probably try and intervene to assist. We have had all this initiative a long time. I participated in the development. government of Moscow done initiative of this nature. Even there, we needed exactly this type of background, because this is exactly what terror guidance is at the center of everything, as people said here. Well, the success of the Far East Asian economies was exactly what they did. The British Council sent a delegation to study what was the success, I mean the secret of their success story in education, especially in medicine science, in Taiwan, in Malaysia, in Hong Kong. They just studied those small countries, and they found that actually the success story came from the strategy where some government said, one of the governments decided to make it a law that every parent who has a child at school, in primary, meaning basic education, must make it a point that they do homework at least for 2 hours with the child after school. From 6 to 8, it's time for school at home. The parent must interrogate how much the student what they did, what were the problems, and what are the future inputs for the child. And it became compulsory, and a student would come and must produce what they did with the parent at school the following day. And the success story today, the National University of Taiwan, it's a public university, but it's the 8th best university, and they say now, it all other private universities, they come not even second from the University of National University of Taiwan. Because they said the best students now from basic education, they queue to enter the university because it takes the best now. It has got now that thing to pick the best because there are too many best students coming from the system of basic education, which is really supervised by parents, but regulated by the government. That a parent who produces a record that has not set with the child, then the parent will be called to account to government, and therefore the child must be removed from school if the parent is not serious about taking the child to school. And that they take it as well, and it has produced National University of Taiwan. I was a guest of the team there. I have been there. So I already know exactly from the horse's mouth. So these are kind of initiatives we wanted to do. And that is why I have the ideas like MTI, Moses Kotana. I knew how in the Soviet Union also they developed their system of education to make mathematics one of the easiest professions, you see. So we need to do all these initiatives and surface one of the most important things. With those few words, I think we again want to thank you very much, but together we can build a better South Africa. We need to do more in terms of coordinating these activities. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we just need to quickly attend to our local members, which is the international travel. Yep.